You are listening to The News Project for the week of November 11th, 2019, brought to you by GNAT TV. This week's podcast brings you these stories. BCIC celebrates the Putnam Block and embraces new challenges. Broadband issues are explored and a task force is formed. Investment advisor Todd Walker speaks on the essentials of investing. This is part one of five, and we have the Arlington Veterans Day ceremony.
Fresh from getting the long-delayed Putnam Block project off the ground and underway, the Bennington County Industrial Corporation held its annual meeting on Thursday, November 7th, at the Bennington Museum. The organization, which historically has served to help attract businesses to the Bennington County area, is focusing more closely on developing the region's workforce. Those attending the 61st annual stockholders meeting heard both the organization's president, Richard Dixie Zenz, and the event's keynote speaker, Lindsay Curley, the secretary of the Agency of Commerce and Community Development, talk about workforce issues and some of the initiatives going on.
Of course, our headline for this year has been the redevelopment of the Putnam Block, and it's one of our big contributions, and it's something that we're all very proud of, and it's amazing for this town. The Bennington Redevelopment Group, BRG, is they've had an amazing vision, tenacity, collaboration to lift up our town and try to make this a better place for everybody. A lot of us are still looking for better and more qualified workers to fill positions here. We're still lacking in that. So the good news is our unemployment rate is pretty low, but we still need some more workers. The thing is that a lot of us as employers are more than willing to train folks that maybe don't have the skills. If we could get people to come and want to come to work, that would be a great thing.
A lot of energy here in Bennington. And honestly, you all continue to lead the way as a rural hub in workforce and economic development. What you have here, your connections, is so special and honestly a model for the rest of the state.
Earlier that afternoon, Ms. Curley stopped by at GNAT TV for a discussion on the state of the broader Vermont economy, and the subject of workforce development also came up.
I think that there is no one magic thing that is going to fix it all. The reality is that we all have to be really creative and think from a perspective of it's an and, not an either or, meaning we need to work really hard looking within our borders to make sure that we pull folks off the sidelines who want to work but maybe have some barriers that are keeping them out of the workforce. If we can help remove some of those barriers and get them into the workforce, bringing Vermonters in is going to be a huge help. At the same time, we need to look outside our state. And so this is where you've probably heard about some of the incentives like the remote worker incentive, which, you know, we're seeing a rise nationwide with remote workers. And so we capitalized on that idea and created this incentive to help bring people to Vermont through that method. And really more than anything, it was getting people's attention, because as we travel around the state, I always ask, what brought you to Vermont? When somebody says, I recently moved to Vermont, or I, you know, came to Vermont later in my life, whatever it might be, I always say, what brought you to Vermont? And you know, you hear outdoor recreation, you hear quality of life, you hear the education, safety, but what you hear so often is people need a catalyst. They need a nudge, something to push them. So it's whether you're talking about the folks that are in our state already or the folks that are out of our state, we really need to give people a reason and some encouragement to jump in and give it a try.
Bill Colvin and Jonathan Cooper of the BCIC, as the industrial corporation is often referred to, along with Wendy Morse of the Department of Labor and Jeannie Jenkins, who serves as the vice chairwoman of the Bennington Select Board, described some of the work the BCIC is doing. In addition to workforce development and attracting businesses to the area, it also runs an industrial park and can also help businesses looking to expand in the Bennington area find land and space for that. The BCIC is also the temporary owner of the Putnam Block project until it's completed, when it will be turned over to the Regional Development Group. Bill Colvin summed up where he saw the BCIC heading.
BCIC's work is multifaceted. As I talked about earlier in the director's report, serving as the boots on the ground for everything that the Agency of Commerce and Community Development does to try to promote business throughout the state, really connecting with those resources. Secretary Curley noted a number of programs, existing and new, that are available through the state, and we really try to get the word out and make the appropriate linkages there. Obviously, we'll continue work on the Putnam Block. We're in planning now for phase two, which we hope to bring about into fruition in 2021, and then we'll talk about future phases beyond that in workforce development.
For the GNET TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. Vermont has come a long way over the past decade when it comes to expanding internet and broadband coverage. While stringing cable or fiber optic wire up every last mile is far from complete, things have improved greatly since 2007, when then-Governor Jim Douglas announced the E-State Initiative, designed to bring modern-day communications around the state into the 21st century. But there's still room to grow in many communities that feel underserved. What qualifies as coverage may not be as robust as modern-day standards might call for. The Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, defines broadband as a minimum of 25 megabits per second download speed and 3 megabits per second of upload speed. Approximately 27% of Vermont addresses lack access to this level of service. Last spring, the state legislature passed Act 79, which provides some funding for planning grants for communities who may wish to explore how to upgrade their service levels. That led to a broadband forum held Friday, November 8th, at the Park House at the Manchester Recreation Park, organized by State Representatives Kathleen James and Robin Chestnut Tangerman, to hear about some of the options underserved communities might explore. The panel included Representative Laura Sibilia, who was instrumental in getting Act 79 passed into law, Clay Purvis, the Director of Telecommunications and Connectivity for the Department of Public Service, and Stan Williams of EC Fiber, a municipal body with 24 member towns in East Central Vermont, who banded together to build a community-owned fiber optic network. Some communities in southern Vermont and in Bennington County may be too rural and too thinly populated to provide private sector cable companies with enough incentive to string cable and fiber optic wire into the remoter corners of town. So taking matters into their own hands might be a way to go. The discussion at the Park House reviewed some options.
What I've seen in about 100 years I've been doing this, is you can put out an RFP to have somebody build your network. You can put out an RFP to have somebody else operate your network.
ValleyNet is working with a couple of other entities and our Regional Planning Commission in Windham to look at a region-wide CUD.
And when you say region, would that be
27 towns? Well, right now it's 27 towns. Okay. There's no reason why it couldn't be
bigger.
So you have to get the town to say yes. So that's where volunteers come into play, right? Like going to the select board, like, hey, we're meeting with this group. We think we can do it. The CUD is formed. It's four towns right now, but we think we could join. Here's what it would look like. So you start building it, putting it together.
All right, so EC Fiber is 24 towns, and that's key. You need towns. We may do this for other communications unit districts. We're not going to do it for districts that have 1, 2, 3, 4. In Vermont, EC Fiber is 17 towns. It's like 15, 20 towns, because towns will attract the attention of an operator like us or a for-profit operator. We happen to be a nonprofit, and it'll also attract capital. We've raised $30 million in revenue bond market. That's a tiny offering, did it over 3 years. To raise less than that is even more difficult because no one will talk to you. So what the town does, it owns the assets. It issues bonds that are tax-free, which is very helpful in keeping our interest costs down. It takes general policy, like we want to be net neutral. We want to cover unserved areas first.
We asked Stan Williams after the meeting what was the most challenging aspect to getting EC Fiber going.
It was financing, because there were no state financing vehicles available, there was no federal funds, and people didn't believe our business model. So we went door to door and convinced 500 people to loan us $7 million to get the thing started. Now, with the state legislation allowing VITA to loan up to $4 million to these districts, they can skip that step and hopefully get to a point where they have a 3 or 4 years of audited financials and stable metrics that will attract private capital or other sources of capital. That was the most difficult thing, was financing.
A task force committee was selected at the end of the meeting to continue pushing the idea forward, and they expect to meet sometime before the end of the month. Representative James gave us her takeaway from the meeting.
Yeah, I thought we were off to a very encouraging start. I mean, my goal, as I said at the beginning of the meeting, was simply to get the folks who know about the next best steps into a room with folks who are interested in taking the next best steps. So to see so many people show up and to see them be interested and to raise their hand for a task force, I think is very encouraging. I think that we're going to probably get moving soon on getting some folks together who are going to explore the possibility of applying for a feasibility grant. And if we can bring $60,000 of planning money into our communities to figure out the best way to get folks connected, I'll feel like I've helped out.
For the GNET TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Hey folks, it's Oz from GNET TV. Today we're in studio and I'm talking with Todd Walker. And Todd, what's your line?
I am a financial advisor and I specialize in socially responsible investing, and we have a firm named Greenvest.
And he's going to be helping us through the next 20 or 30 years, giving us financial advice. So we're going to shoot a number of segments today, so you won't see us changing our clothes, just so you know. And Todd, for the first segment one, segment two, and probably segment three, it's all going to be on sort of the same topic. And what is that topic?
Well, it's about the essential principles of investing instead of just relying on stock tips and things like that. You know, how do you successfully invest based on professional disciplines?
Right. So instead of taking the cabbie's advice, you're setting up a system that hopefully leads to success.
Right. Because when you take stock tips or just random thoughts, oh, that looks like a great company, I buy their products, you're at best probably getting a 50-50. Chance of success, 50% of gains, 50% of loses, and over time, that cancels out. And so the best you can do is break even. So what investment professionals, especially those managing huge amounts of money, you can imagine billions of dollars, have to come up with systems that increases the probability of success. That's really what professional investing
probability.
Does.
Probability.
Yeah.
Right.
And it increases that probability from 50% till, if you invest in a long enough period, it's very close to 100% that you'll probably have some kind of gain if you invest in enough diversification and for a long enough period of time. And I'm not talking about 30 years. I'm talking about 10 years.
Got it. Okay.
That you can be much more successful.
Okay. Yep. So take us in.
Okay. Well, as you know, I get questions all the time from clients. And over the years, have come up with all sorts of ways to explain things that I found get better reception than just dry investment talk. But we're going to go through sort of the essential principles to set up for success. So the first thing, people come and they want to get investing, but the first thing I ask is, do you have an emergency fund? So, and this is based on being a fiduciary. People, if you don't have something in savings that's an FDIC insured, protected, you don't want to be in the market. You have to because the market is volatile, and you want to know that when you take that the money will be there when you want it. But it's not that it's going to disappear, but that it might be just down in a decline period. You don't want to take it out then because you don't have a chance to get back up.
And this emergency fund is not an emergency to buy stocks. It's an emergency to fix your broken leg. I don't know.
Well, exactly. I mean, food, medical emergencies, et cetera. So it's there so you then can go forward with more confidence into the market.
Like, how much should I save?
Well, 6 months to a year of living expenses.
Okay.
And then at that point, 6 months if you feel confident, a year if you feel that you need more money, and then from then you go into the market. The only caveat to that is if you're a young person, you know, because you don't have an emergency fund, you want to get started with investing. So you have to sort of do both at the same time, because you want to get in the market. You don't want to give up that time you have of being a young person to get that compounding growing over time. But, you know, understandably, you don't have 6 months, maybe to a year. So it's just a little caveat.
And it could take you so long to save that 6 months a year because your job pays so badly.
Well,
that it could take you a couple years to finally get that. And what you're also saying is you're not in the market for those 2 years.
You're not in those markets. And it's critical to be in the market when you're young. The other thing is to establish a risk tolerance. You have to figure out what's your comfort level. And the comfort level is usually based on, can you replace this money? That's the way I explain it. People say, well, you're aggressive and conservative or whatever. The real way to say, you know, can you replace this money? And again, when you're younger, you can be much more aggressive because you have more time. But the other reason is because you're going to have all this income over your life to replace any bad investments you make. But if you're older, it's retirement money. Obviously, you can't take the risk. So that's why I get clients coming to me that say, well, I think sometimes they want to act like they're more aggressive than they are or something because that may be a better thing than to say you're conservative. I don't know. But they'll say something, but then when you really ask that question, well, you know, can you really lose this money? They'll go, oh no. You know, and you're like, no, you're conservative. You know, that's right. It. So it's a better test. Again, knowing that we don't have that much time, I'm gonna race through these a little bit because some are obvious, but some it's good to just get these fundamentals as you sort of march into the market. The other one is, do you have a 10-year investment horizon before you get in the stock market? And that always surprises people, or sometimes, because if the stock market traditionally has this 10-year window that it does return money, there's been one period that did not, then you don't want to expect to take money out before that, because again, it could be in a decline, and you don't want to pull it out during a decline. So if people say to me, oh no, we really are saving for a house, this is for a house or a college or something, and I'll say that you don't want to be in the market. I mean, or very conservatively in the market, maybe just bonds, but not stocks. So next is you build these fund building blocks of investing, is who will do the investing? You know, do you want to do it? Do you going to hire a professional? Are you going to have a mutual fund do it for you? Are you going to actually do a financial advisor who works for you personally? So it's just...
Or your company through their 401, do they sometimes try to do it?
Yeah, that's another group that's actually, in a way, a mutual fund. But yeah, I mean, where are you going to invest?
Got it.
And who will you choose and why? We'll get into that one of the other segments as to how to hire a financial advisor if you wish. The next thing is, you know, where to put the money. I mean, where do you start? What do I invest? I mean, everybody's at you to invest with them. Insurance companies, investment companies, banks, et cetera, you know, where do you put the money? And I think that we talked about the emergency fund, so that would be a bank, right? The first place that when you start investing is someplace you can get free money. Which is, again, this is the way I've come to explain things to people. They kind of go, that sounds interesting, you know?
Right.
What I mean by that is either a retirement plan, IRS qualified plan, you know, an IRA, a SEP IRA, Solo K, something like that, or your employer's plan.
The 401k. Got it.
And typically the first place within that group is going to be your employer's plan, because most often today there's some kind of employer match. You put in so much, they match up to, you put in 3%, they match that 3%, and you can put in more.
Right.
Well, that's just found money. I mean, it would be crazy not to take advantage of that before you invest on your own. So you want to max that plan out as much as you can. If you don't have an employer plan, then you have vehicles available to you like a SEP IRA, which is an employer plan.
And a quick question on that.
Yep.
So the employer matches you up to 3%.
Yep.
You probably can put in more.
Oh, yes.
But probably you shouldn't, because you're done getting the free money and maybe now it's time to switch to the IRA and get the tax break?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. It's an interesting question. And especially if you know, we deal in social responsible investing. So some plans and employers are getting hip to that and there's choices. Many still don't. So in that case, yeah, you'd get the match and then you might move over to your own plan that you could do specialize in SRI.
Right.
But it depends on the choices at that point. What does the employer offer as investment options and what can you do yourself?
Can I have a 401 and an IRA at the same year side by side?
You can up to certain limits.
Okay.
You just to make it simple, the government's not going to allow you to go up to the max on your plan and the max on an IRA.
Gotcha.
And get you to and have you deduct all of it. And I'll just a quick mention, there's also within these choices now Roth IRAs. Well, they've been for quite some time. And that is a regular IRA, a regular 401k, you put so much in and then you're allowed to deduct that against your income, right? But eventually, and then that grows tax deferred, and eventually you're going to have to pay that money back.
That's right. So whether you get the tax break today or the tax break 40 years from now, you're still going to have to eventually pay taxes on something.
No. Well, on that one, but not the Roth.
But not the Roth.
Roth is tax-free forever.
Forever, because you already paid the taxes.
Yeah. In fact, a big benefit of Roth that not many people know about is that they're tax-free to your heirs as well. So one of the best gifts you can give your children is to save for a Roth.
Listen, that wasn't there when I was 20.
I know.
All right, wait, I'm taking
Maybe
you away.
Maybe it was. I don't know.
Okay.
But anyway, so a Roth is also, like, for young people, the Roth is almost always the best answer because over time. But the person to ask about this, this choice is your accountant. So the accountant, we work closely with them and we'll suggest maybe you should be doing more in the retirement plan. Then we'll say, now let's go to the accountant. The accountant's going to decide which vehicle. And the accountant can also weigh in on the company plan, too. Anyway, that's the first place to put money.
Okay. 401.
And then from there, you start opening up maybe taxable accounts or things like that. And the last one, we were talking about, well, how much to invest? And then that's the question you get a lot. You know, how much should I put in? How much should I save? And what I've come down to is that basically, this is not absolute, you know, figured out to the dollar. But my experience has been if you invest 10% of your earnings every year, you probably don't have to worry. I mean, you're going to get to retirement with enough money to continue your lifestyle as you had before. So 10% of what you earn, you put away. And you think, well, that doesn't sound like that much. But believe it or not, if you did that, you'd be saving more than most Americans that just do not save that much per year.
Sad.
Yeah.
That 10% over time, just out of curiosity, so it would probably allow you to continue your lifestyle that you had lived, or could it build so great that it might actually afford you a higher living standard in retirement, or is that tricky to ask?
Yeah, tricky because legally we can't promise
can't promise anything. But
yeah, that's one thing, because of so many factors. But that's why I said 10. I mean, it could be the stock market has grown an average of 10% a year over time.
Right.
It was 8, but this latest 10 years since 2008 has just been way up. So that the market, but 10% growth. So don't forget, you're getting the 10% you're putting away plus 10% growth of that. So this is the compounding that starts happening. That's why. So if you just, people say, well, how much should I do? The max that from a 401k is depending on your situation, around $16,000. So that may be more or less than 10%. Obviously, if you have more than 10%, then go for it if you want to. Never had, as I was saying to you earlier, never heard a client say, God, I saved too much for retirement. I'm really upset. I don't know what to do.
I'd like to say that.
I know. It's always usually the other way. So, I think, because if you save too much, then there's charities. I mean, you can.
And this 10%, because it also sounds like you're saying is that we're always assuming that this 10% only works if you have a lot of money. But what you're saying is that a person who may not have a lot of money, if they can still pull off this 10%, they can still end up having the life
that they want,
right?
I mean, but they can take vacations and have their
house. Right, but the point is, it's just because you don't make a lot of money doesn't mean you can't do something about it.
That's it. Well, that's a good way to put it. I mean, a lot of people say, well, we don't have much, it won't amount to much. But it will amount to the most critical thing that you want, which is financial independence.
Right.
Financial freedom. Feeling. The end, at some point you want to just be able to say, look, I've all this years of my life I've been accumulating and helping my family and everything else. And now I just want to kick back and do what I want to do. I want financial freedom to be what it may be, helping charities. It may be traveling all the time. It may be starting another company, believe it or not, just because it's fun. But it's the freedom to decide what you want to do.
Right.
And that's really what all this is about. This is what is it. giving yourself, not become, well, and especially with our clients, socially responsible, it's not about becoming super wealthy. It's about being able to move on to higher right. levels, like Maslow hierarchy right. of needs,
And moving some of the fear from your life.
And removing fear from your life. Boy, I didn't realize how good my profession.
Right, that's actually crucial.
Yeah, but it's true. It is about fear. And so we're trying to remove fear in investing so that you can remove fear in your life. I got to write all this down.
All right, so I'm dragging you off. So where are we at? Where are we at in this?
Sorry. So this is about, there's a lot more, but you'll have to tune in next week.
Right, because we're that. So in segment two,
yeah.
What are we going to be dealing with in segment two?
Well, we're going to go on and be, at this point we've got these building blocks, and now we're essentially going to say, let's start building the portfolio. Let's actually start fleshing it out. What are you going to pick? How are you going to allocate it? How are you going to diversify? There's other parts of this discipline.
That's sort of the nitty-gritty.
It's the nitty-gritty.
Right, that's where the,
But okay. Before that, I just wanted to get into, don't be afraid of it and that investing willy-nilly, just even if you hit some giants, it's just never going to get you as much as if you just have more discipline.
I did that in my younger days and failed horribly.
Oh.
All right, Todd, thank you so much. All right. Everybody, we're going to see you next time. And thanks for watching.
On this day, Veterans Day, we are commemorating the service of veterans of all wars. We remember how men and women set aside their civilian pursuits to serve their nation's cause, defending the freedom of mankind and preserving our precious American heritage. We believe our strength on the field of battle, on the supply lines which nourished our armed might, lay in the justice of our cause against forces of evil. We believe our determination made us better warriors because we fought with our minds and our hearts as well as our bodies. We recognize service to our country and her cause do not end with the termination of military service. We continue our endeavors in behalf of an honorable world peace with a feeling of profound gratitude to God and to the men and women who gave their lives as their part of the cost of this noble cause, noblest of causes. Out of blood and sweat, we learn the purpose of sacrifice, tolerance, bravery, and discipline. These are the solid foundation stones upon which a great nation is built. In our continuing quest for an honorable world peace, we must cultivate these virtues. Boy Scouts will raise our flag, please. Yes, go, man. At this time, if the Brownies would lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, we could all participate.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for for which it stands, one nation,
under God, indivisible, and liberty and justice for all.
I will have introduce Mark Colty to read a prayer.
Please uncover. O God, we bow our heads in thankfulness for the victories thou hast granted us, to us and to those people who have united with us to stamp out the evil of aggression, intolerance, and greed. We beseech thee to bring the blessings of understanding to the families and the friends in this and in other lands of those who have given their lives that men may be free. Grant, O God, that those closest to the fallen may mingle the pain of their losses with the ennobling light of sacrifice for civilization. Sacrifice for a better world, for this and other generations yet unborn. Grant us too, O God, the courage to so live with the family of nations around the world that the end of strife will be the beginning of an enduring peace. Grant us patience in planning with our fellow men and women a world in which nations may resolve their differences by peaceful means. Amen.
Amen.
Next, we have a short message from one of our representatives for the state of Vermont, and yep. Mr. McClafferty will read that for us.
It's a letter from Senator Sanders. I very much regret that my schedule prevents me from joining today's commemoration of Veterans Day here in Arlington. I want to thank the American Legion, Paula Fountain Post 69, for organizing this event to honor the service and sacrifices made by our friends, family, and neighbors. Vermonters have a long and proud history of military service, participating in every major conflict in U.S. history, dating back to the Green Mountain Boys' role in the American Revolution. I especially want to thank all the veterans and family members gathered here today, as well as those who cannot be with us. We owe you a tremendous debt of gratitude, which we will never truly be able to repay. So while we set aside this day to recognize their service, we must commit ourselves to keep America's promise to you, just as you kept your promise to us. As a longtime member and former chair of the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, I am honored to work every day to keep that promise to our veterans and their families. Whatever the political climate in Washington, you have my word that I will continue to work to preserve, protect, and improve VA, and to ensure that veterans and their families in Vermont and around the country receive their every benefit they have earned and deserve. We are fortunate here in Vermont to have such strong support for veterans, from local veteran service organizations to the VA Medical Center in White River Junction, to the 7 community-based outpatient centers that serve Vermonters, to the 2 vet centers. Veterans throughout our state have a place to go to when they need care, services, or just someone to talk to who understands their unique experiences. But we can always do better, which is why I rely on you to share your experiences and perspectives, to help me promote policies in Washington reflect the real needs of veterans and their families. Again, thank you for the opportunity to share my gratitude for all the veterans and their families here today. Sincerely, Bernard Sanders, United States Senator.
Thank you, Steve. At this time, I would like to thank all who came. Our commander, Jim Brown, couldn't make it today. He left me in charge. So I would like to thank everybody at this that came, the Girls Brownies, the Boy Scouts. We have Department of Vermont auxiliary officials here and Sons officials here to help us celebrate this, plus the wonderful people from town. We are having a little munchy get-together at the Legion, and you're all welcome to come over and share some time and talk about anything you like. Thank you for coming today. Did I forget anything?
Jerry. Jerry, can I speak on this?
Natalie's got to speak for us.
The town purchased this flagpole, and we're very proud of it. And sometime next year, we are going to have this slanted granite marker placed here, and it will say, in memory of all of those who served. And next year, it will be in the town budget to purchase the same kind of flagpole for the West Arlington Cemetery. And we will have the same plaque put in front of that flagpole. Linda Durrell had a fundraiser, and we have a little bit of money to go towards this. And if you would like to contribute to it, it would be fine. Give me a call. Other than that, the town will purchase it. And thank you all for being here. We're very proud of it.
Thank you, Nat.
Thank you. Good work.
Thank you all for coming. See you at the Legion.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.TV.